Welcome, everyone. I think it's great that you're all here, and Judy will be just starting us off.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this wonderful World Peace Diet Satsang. What a wonderful thing. I'm admitting people while I'm talking, so I see another person. There's lots of people joining. It's wonderful. I just think this is a great idea. My name's Judy Carman. But anyway, I think this is a wonderful idea that Will has decided to do this very, very special World Peace Diet Satsang at a time like this when there's so much fear in the world and anxiety and contention between really good friends right now. So as vegans and World Peace Diet people and people who want to bring more love to the world, this is a wonderful way to help us do that, to stay centered, to stay focused on love, on doing the most good, the least harm, and finding ways to help everyone deal with the fear and the confusion that's going on in the world right now. So Will is going to lead us in satsang, and I just feel so blessed to be here, and I'm so glad that you all have joined us. And so Will, I'll turn it over to you.
Great, thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thanks so much, Judy. Welcome, everyone. I'm delighted to be able to be with you here for this time. And I've got, kind of set up a little studio here in our living room where we have the piano as well. So I thought it would be nice to do a little music along with the meditation and then open it up for sharing some ideas. This is not so much, I was away a few minutes ago, so I'm not sure exactly everything that Judy said, but this is not so much a time for getting involved with political discussions and so forth. I know that we all probably have strong opinions about all kinds of things, but the main idea, I guess, is to connect with the ancient wisdom spiritual traditions that can help us to navigate our way through this and respond in the best way. So it's wonderful to see your shining faces, and I don't have things turned on. I don't have the chat turned on and the other stuff, the mic-y. But you can, when we have the Q&A session, you can I can unmute anyone. So why don't we go ahead and just maybe take a moment for a short meditation here in the beginning, and then. I'll share some thoughts that I've had about what our current situation is and how it relates to the ancient wisdom teachings that I'm familiar with, primarily from Buddhism, my time studying the Buddhist teachings and being a Zen monk in Korea and so forth. And then we can have some sharing and discussion. My feeling overall is that this will probably be not overly long. I know we're all very busy with things, so I want to just go ahead and jump right in. So much love to all of you. Thanks so much for your presence. It's really already making my heart sing to see your beautiful faces and to know that you're present by phone or however it is. So, okay, so we'll begin. I'm just going to play a little music, and I'm hoping this my voice carries over the sound of the piano here. And let's take a moment just as we enter the silence. We can abide always in this present moment, no matter what is happening in the outer world. We can always return to the center point. Where we know directly that what we are is infinite and eternal consciousness. that what we are is awareness, that we are experiencing through our physical body, but we are not merely our physical body. That we're here on this earth for a few precious years, a few decades, to awaken to the truth as deeply as we can, and to be a light of kindness and healing, of peace and harmony, to live authentically our unique life. And the greatest gift we can give to the world is the adventure of living our unique life. So we give thanks for everyone who is with us on this call, knowing that each and every one of us is an emissary of light, that we all have gone through enormous challenges to bring us to this point, and that our gifts continue to ripen and develop within our hearts and minds, within our bodies and spirits, and that we have a purpose on this earth for this lifetime. Abiding in the awareness that the light that pervades the universe, that this shines at the heart of all creation, is shining always in our heart, is shining in every cell of our being, bringing every thought and word and every aspect of our life into harmony with the truth that we are. So we give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth, and to work with others to bring healing to our world, to help liberate animals, ecosystems, human beings, and future generations from the delusion of separateness, breathing, breathing together, in silence, the infinite potential of all songs, of our unique song. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free. And may each one of us awaken to our true nature, remembering our source, and working together to build a more enlightened society, a world that cares for everyone, breathing and radiating love into the world, breathing and radiating compassion into the world, breathing and radiating joy into the world, and breathing and radiating peace, abiding in love, compassion, joy, and peace. Connected by the breathing, by the shared energy of life that vivifies not only our physical bodies, but the being that we are. All right, so may our time together be a time that generates ripples of peace and healing that go into our individual lives and out into the shared web of relations that permeates this entire planet, and may we be part of the awakening of humanity at this, again, at this challenging time. So I'd like to share a few thoughts with everybody that have been coming to me about the bigger picture, because I think part of the difficulty that we face is that we tend in our society to be conditioned and pressured to reduce our awareness, and that unfortunately creates a lot of suffering. What in the Buddhist tradition is called samsara, which means the delusion of being a fundamentally separate self. And as a fundamentally separate self, I need to get what I want in the world and keep away what I don't want, and end up being in a struggle with others who are under the same basic delusion. And so a lot of, I think, what veganism is about is not only liberating animals from human tyranny, but liberating human animals, ourselves, from the tyranny of delusion, of feeling like we're fundamentally separate from nature and from other expressions of life. And so right now, of course, we're going through a period where that sense of separateness in many ways is being accentuated in a variety of ways. And there's a sense of division, I think, that's more strong than ever among, even within the vegan movement and among people. So to come back and breathe together and realize that we're all on the same side, basically. We're all yearning for a world of peace and kindness and liberation and freedom and harmony, and to do the best we can to be agents of positive change. And to realize that, of course, there, as we all know, for myself, I've been a vegan now for 40 years, and my whole sense, really, of living in the last 40 years is that we are called to be questioners of the official narratives in our society as best we can, not only in the outer world, but on the inner levels, the ones that I've internalized myself. So one of the things that, one of the foundational teachings really, is the teaching of the power of the mind. That whatever we put our focus on becomes our reality, becomes the channel. You know, there's a great teaching, I think, just very simple, that when we have a television set, which I have not had one for over 50 years, but if I did have one, I remember when I was a kid we had one, and then until I was about 15, and then I stopped watching. But I remember, you know, you can change the channel on the TV, and it's like suddenly a whole different thing. You know, it can be a drama, it can be a horror, it can be a comedy. You know, you just change the channel, you get a different reality. And the thing, I think it's very similar with our awareness. We can change the way we frame things. We can change the way we view what's happening. We can be grateful, or we can be traumatized and miserable in many ways. And so, to understand this, and one of the things that I want to emphasize is just the importance I feel of myself taking responsibility for the quality of my physical health and the quality of my mental condition. That the idea is that we have the power through training and through awareness to raise our awareness and our emotional state, essentially, or our way of relating to the world and our relationships with others through practice. So there's something in the Buddhist tradition called the Eight Winds. And the basic idea in the Eight Winds is that our mind, when we are in delusion, we're always being blown about. The mind, the calmness of the mind, the essential purity of the mind, the essential spaciousness and joy, really, of our true nature, the joy that doesn't need any reason in the outer world. That's a fundamental idea, that our true nature essentially is joy, because just to be alive and have the possibility to be aware and look out of our eyes, and we're always alive. There's an old spiritual teaching that says, you will never be any more dead than you are right now. It's good to remember that. You know, we'll never be any more dead than we are right this second. You'll always be at least this alive, and maybe a lot more alive, in the sense that when we leave this body, we're not dead. And so to really be, you know, very conscious of that. So the basic idea is that we are, as awareness, we are awareness. We are eternal awareness. We're manifesting through a vehicle. These are really not taught to us as people growing up in our society because of the materialism of our society that dominates and exploits billions of animals and sees them as meat, and we end up seeing ourselves that way. So the idea is with the Eight Winds is to return to this awareness that our mind, our true nature, is inherently joyful and peaceful, and that we can, through our practice of meditation and right relationships and connecting with nature and living our life as authentically as possible, come into an awareness where we are no longer at the mercy of the Eight Winds. So the Eight Winds are four pairs of opposites. Some of you may know this already. It's not a very foreign teaching, but the Eight Winds are the things that sort of get us, that move us, that make our minds fly off in all kinds of directions, right? So the first one, the first pair of opposites is pleasure and pain. So, of course, we like pleasure, we don't like pain. So we're constantly, in many ways, at the mercy of these two pairs of opposites. These are two of the Eight Winds, pleasure and pain, trying to, in some way, get people to say nice things about us, to buy products that we like, to set the temperature so that we're warm enough, to get food so that we're fed, to, I mean, there's this whole thing, and then to avoid painful situations. So pleasure and pain were kind of continual. Those are two of the eight winds. Another one, these are big ones. I'm giving the big ones first, actually. Pleasure and pain, the other big one is gain and loss. I mean, oh my gosh, you know, oh, I was just talking to my good friend and his mother is passing away, and he's really grieving because, you know, she's still with him, but he knows it's coming. And so this sense of loss, we're all going to lose. You know, there's an old Zen saying that life, our human life is an adventure. It's like stepping onto a boat that's going to go out on the water, and it's absolutely guaranteed that it will definitely sink. You know, this is the idea. So we are going to at some point lose our life, and we're going to lose those who are close to us, and we're going to lose whatever we accumulate on the physical level. And so we're trying to gain, we're trying not to lose, essentially. So these are two more of the worldly winds. Now the other four worldly winds that disturb our mind are praise and blame. This is a huge one. You know, we will do anything almost in many ways to be accepted by the people around us, to be loved, to be talked good of, you know, and we don't want to be blamed. We don't want to be criticized. We don't want, you know, that's really the, I've found over the years, if there's one thing that you want to see your ego, right? The ego. Ego is, of course, the word for the fundamentally separate self. Just see how you respond when you are unjustly accused of something, right? You know it's unjust and you're accused. That part of the mind that jumps up and wants to defend itself, right? That's the ego, being unjustly accused. And so being blamed for something, especially if it doesn't seem right, you know, the ego will just have a fit about that. And so we make ourselves very miserable and other people too. So praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, and then the other one is kind of similar to praise and blame, but it's a little broader. It's usually called fame and infamy. So having good repute in the world in general, having ill repute, having everybody think, oh, what an idiot, what a stupid person, what a bad person. You know, these things. So the idea is that as we approach spiritual enlightenment, these eight winds have less and less influence over us, that we're peaceful and really fearless in a sense, because we see that at a deeper level, what we are as infinite and eternal consciousness can never be praised or blamed, can never gain anything or lose anything, can never really experience pleasure or pain, or fame or infamy, that what we are shines, radiates eternally, and that we're essentially here on this earth to awaken to ever deeper levels of understanding of this so that we can be a force for peace and healing and harmony for others. And so this is not something that really we can attain, I don't think, through mere book reading, or even by listening to me talk about it, or listening to myself talk about it. This is something that can grow within us as we work in the fires of our life. And I think, you know, right now with what's happening in the world, it's just our time where, from my point of view, the eight winds are getting whipped up, you know, everywhere. And there's a part of us, I think, that of course naturally wants to defend our life, our way of life, our freedom, the freedom of others, our health, or however we want to look at it. You know, we're seeing this happen. But I think it's very important to also have the perspective of the being, the infinite and eternal being that we are, and come from that place in whatever we're saying or doing, to see other beings also as eternal consciousness and not cast them into the role of being enemies or adversaries in that sense, that we're all, in a sense, wounded. We all have our own blind spots and delusions based on our programming, and we've all been harmed being raised in a society that's organized at its core around killing millions of animals and having all of us eat them and pretend that it doesn't matter and so forth. So we're all in a different place in our awakening. But that's the basic idea. So I just wanted to essentially share with everyone this concept of the eight winds. And the idea, I think, that goes with it, really, of ahimsa. You know, Judy has just written a book, Judy Carman, called Homo Ahimsa. The underlying idea is, you can find it on Amazon. It just came out, and it's a wonderful book because, I mean, the underlying idea, I think, is so healthy, because the idea is we're Homo sapiens, so we've kind of inaugurated ourselves as the wise human beings here on this earth, sort of superior to all other forms of life. And Judy is saying that unless we evolve to Homo Ahimsa, and this is really, I think, in main way, the similar message in the World Peace Diet, to evolve each one of us as individuals and to help our society evolve toward a way of being where we're not based on dominating and exploiting other forms of life or each other. And the eight winds is really what drives the whole thing, because as long as I identify with a separate self, then I'm going to try, I want to gain. I want to win. I want pleasure. I want to avoid pain. I want to avoid loss. That misidentification with a separate self. So the final point I want to make, in kind of tying this all together, is just the importance of every day attending to the quality of consciousness. And I'd really like to encourage everyone, if you don't already, to take time on a regular basis. You know, Madeline and I always spend a few hours in the morning before we do anything, sitting quietly and meditating, and also doing some yoga and a few other things that are meditative. Tai Chi, I do Tai Chi, and take a swim in the lake and a few other things. But just sitting quietly is really helpful, because one can watch the actual activity of the mind and realize that basically every thought has these three different dimensions. There's in Zen it's called the first, second, and third nen. So the first nen is where there's just an awareness, a perception. And immediately attached to that is the second nen, a second thought, which is the sense of me, right? So it's like, I see this, I hear this, I feel this, I like this, I don't like this. So it's not just seeing, hearing, liking, not liking. It's me. I don't like. So that's the second end is the sense of me. And that's very powerful. And that's what in Buddhism we begin to question that. But then the third end is what ties it all together. The third end is the thinking process that connects the first and second nens, right? This is me feeling this or seeing this or hearing this, and then I know why she's saying that, or what I'm going to do, or how I'm going to respond to that. And so basically we go through our day with on the third nen all the time. It's this internal dialogue that's continually reinforcing this fundamental sense of myself as a separate object dealing with other separate objects. Right? This is such a deep habit pattern that it's very hard to see it and feel it and understand it, because it's pervasive. It's a quality of our consciousness, especially in our society today with so much complexity. So to take time every day to unravel that somewhat, to just look and see the third nen, the second nen, me, how the story always has a me, and then to see, is there really a me, actually? There's a body, there's a sense, but what is this me? What is the source of this I, this sense of me that I think is right here? Is it my body? If the body is gone, what happens? Do I disappear, or is awareness over then? See, what our society, the materialism of our society, wants us to believe that. Of course, then we're very easily controlled and manipulated, because that's basic existential terror. But all the ancient wisdom traditions, of course, go beyond that and say, you know, find out. You know, what if I'm not this body? I'm not the emotions. I'm not the thought patterns that I've accumulated. I'm not the history and the stories. So, you know, what actually is it? And the beautiful thing is that there comes a point of gradual glimpses and realizations. And you know, I think this is something that we can all begin to get a sense of, where we realize that we're not essentially damageable by what happens here on this planet. and that we're here as an emissary, in a sense, from a bigger dimension. We're here on this earth. Maybe we came here to fulfill a certain mission or to connect with a certain purpose that we have. But to remember that in the midst of all these things, because we're going through these really powerful rapids of change now together, and instead of just getting sucked down into all of the conflicts and confusion and pandemonium, to sort of be able to float above it somewhat and have a perspective that in the bigger picture, I don't have to worry essentially about survival. You can't be killed. And that this can confer upon us a sense of confidence where we're not worried what other people think of us, or we're not worried about what might happen to us. We're more concerned about just helping others, blessing, serving, being as much as we can a vehicle for truth. And I think the more we can support each other in our own unique way of doing that, by doing it ourselves, then I think we can help make this situation we're going through now a healing and awakening experience. So I have no idea how that's going to happen, but that's the feel. That's the reason I thought it'd be a good idea to have a satsang, just to kind of get out of the minutiae of what's actually happening and who said this and what they said and this governmental policy and that one and if we agree or don't and what we're going to do about it, to just breathe and give thanks for this moment, because we have this moment. So I'm going to wrap it up there. I think I've talked for long enough maybe, and we have I'm happy to respond to certain thoughts or questions that you guys may have. The underlying idea, though, for me, is to cherish even the difficult time, what seems to be a difficult time. I wrote an article recently about some of the, I talked about my vision. I didn't talk about the back pain, but basically these, I had back pain, I had vision problems, back pain problems, these problems, these bad things, that kind of happen. That they have a gift. I guess that's the point. I remember having this, kind of chronic back pain problem when I was younger, and I'll just say this briefly. And then, and I didn't like it. It was like lower back pain. It hurt. I couldn't. It would crop up now and then it would go away, and then it would come back again. And I remember going when I was only maybe 25 or something, 26. I decided to go on a very intense retreat in Oregon, a solo by myself. And on some sacred land to a Tibetan Buddhist tradition that I was a part of. I was, doing practice with this Tibetan Buddhist center in San Francisco, and they had this retreat land, and they had a cabin on the land. They had this little cabin, tiny. It was only the size of, it was just a little bit longer than my body and about a little bit wider than my body. It was really tiny. But it was to do prostrations, so I was doing, one of the foundational practices is you do 108,000 prostrations where you go right out on your stomach and back up again. It's a really very vigorous exercise and hard to do, and you say a mantra and you say do a visualization and this whole thing. So I was doing that, and I was doing that every day. I was doing thousands of prostrations every day, and then meditating a lot and reading some spiritual books, and I was just by myself. I didn't see a soul. They would ring a bell about 100 yards away and drop off food once a week. I'd pick it up, but I never saw a soul. And this went on for months, actually. I was just completely isolated. And so partway into it, after maybe a month or so, I got this stabbing pain in my back. Every time I tried to do a prostration, it hurt so much. And it was like, oh, man, here I am trying to do these prostrations, and I couldn't do it because this back pain had cropped up again. And I was like, oh, no. So I remember going to bed and just, every time I could really feel it when I would bend over, like to pick up this bottle of water that I would drink from or something, it would just hurt so much. So I remember the next morning I woke up and I thought, okay, hopefully now my back will be good. And I woke up and sure enough, it just hurt just like it did the night before. So I remember sitting in meditation and this thought came blazing through my mind like someone shouted it into my consciousness. A pain in the body is a pain in the mind. It was just so crystal clear. A pain in the body is a pain in the mind. You know, and I hadn't seen anybody for, you know, I was in an altered state. You get that way if you don't see anybody for a long time. And so I just started contemplating that, and I had a journal I would sometimes write in, and I just started writing about that, and I realized what this was telling me is that this pain in my body was not a pain in my body, it was a pain in my mind. And that when I was a little boy, I had gone through some difficult times where I became kind of afraid of the dangerous world. Instead of just reaching out and hugging and loving and laughing and playing and everything, I was starting to get worried about relationships, and things were getting complicated. I think I was about 11 or 12 years old. And that's when I started to get a blur in my vision. And so I could just see this old wound in my consciousness of being sort of afraid to reach out to the world, that I would be hurt if I just was open, and, you know. And that consciousness wants to heal everything. So anyway, the basic thing that happened was I just started to feel into that and then turned it around and realized that, okay, for that little boy, that's true, but that's not true for me now. Now, as part of my spiritual practice, I love reaching out to the world because I know the world is not separate from what I am. And I felt this overwhelming sense of just love for that water bottle that was over there. and so I knew at a certain point, I just kept waiting and kept feeling into it and getting stronger and stronger that little boy, I love that little boy, but that's not who I am. It's infinite, eternal consciousness. And I remember, I'll never forget, I got off the bed and I reached over and I picked up that bottle and there was no pain at all. It was just evaporated instantly. Because I had, on some level, shifted something. And I think it's those kinds of things that seem like they're bad things. You wish it would never happen. And if I would have gone to a doctor at that point and said, you know, gosh, give me some pain medications. I got to take care of this. You know, it's terrible. I need an operation. You know, then the symptom is suppressed. The underlying emotional dynamic and wound is also suppressed. So then, you know, I need to have cancer then, or I need to have something, you know, to wake me up. So the whole idea is to see the gift in things. And that's what I'm seeing also with the current social strife and so forth. There are gifts here if we can look more deeply and see what is the message. What is the healing message? And each one of us, I think, in order to do that, helpfully, we're called to do that ourselves. And that's what I'm working on all the time. I'm not saying I'm any better than anybody else at this. I'm just saying that to have that orientation, that we can have a positive thing come out of what seems to be a bad thing, that we can somehow heal, gradually untie the knots, gradually heal the wounds, gradually return to our true nature. So that's kind of what I wanted to share with you pretty much now. And I think... I know you're all on a similar path of awakening in your own unique, beautiful ways. And so let's go ahead and, I've got this set up, so I think you can go ahead. If anyone wants to present a thought or a question or something, I think, you know, we have a few minutes for that. So let's see. Go ahead and I think you press *6 or click on your, or do something. I think I can see you, or I can unmute you. Somebody can. I'm just welcoming Anna Ferguson. I just see is joining us. Our good old friend from Cincinnati. She's a wonderful yoga teacher. So, but anyway, good to see you all, and thanks so much, everyone, for listening and for caring, because I know that's what binds all of us, ultimately, is that we have a heart that cares about other you know, the expressions of life around us, and we want to do the best we can to be caring human beings and not merely be lost in the delusion of self-centered striving, because ultimately the eight winds are just that's called samsara, which means suffering that never ends. And if we don't heal it in this life, it'll be the next life. You know, we don't get out of it. So the idea is to put forth the best effort we can when we can, which is like right now, the best we can. So Judy, I'm just wondering, can you see if there's anybody that would like to ask a question? If you do want to, and maybe nobody does, because I'm not that good at figuring this out here, how this whole thing works. I'm kind of new at a lot of this, but I'm just looking to see if there's anyone that wants to say something. And if you don't, one of the beautiful things is we can also be together in silence, and then I can play some music, and we can. You can't, because I love the thing about music is you can never argue with a D minor chord. So I can play some music. I mean, I'm kind of like hoping to, just create a field of energy that we can bring into our lives afterwards and remember sort of what's important. But I also like to give the opportunity if people have a pressing something along the lines of what I'm talking about. Let's kind of keep it in that same general tenor of the underlying orientation of our conversation. Because
I've unmuted myself, but I don't know if everyone else can or not, since I'm a co-host, and I can't really tell where I am in participants. I can't tell if anybody's raising their hand, but I would try, if you want to say something, I would try unmuting yourself down at the lower left or pressing star 6. It's not working, Suzanne.
People I can see, you can wave your hand, but some of you are on phones, so that's makes it a little harder.
If I clicked unmute all, would that then make
no.
it possible?
No. All right, we'll go ahead and try this. How do you do it? Okay, there's Deborah. Okay, now you can actually unmute yourself, but let's just only unmute one person at a time.
Okay.
So if anybody really wants to say something, or I can respond to a question you might have, then feel free to unmute yourself now. Deborah, go ahead. You can unmute yourself.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, I got on here a little late today. I just wanted to point out that if you select participants, people can raise their electronic hand, or it's such a small group, we can just raise our visual hand, those of us who are showing our screen, and then you can call on them.
So that's, okay, well, thank you for telling me that. I don't see that option here for some reason, but I'm looking. But I see allow participants to unmute themselves. I don't see allow participants to raise their hands.
Well, they can raise their hands. Like, anybody can go to participants. And I just raised my hand.
Oh, and go, okay, click on participants, and then you can raise your hand. Oh, that's a cool thing. Okay, so I didn't know about that. Okay, thanks. Deborah's our tech guru here. Thank you.
Okay,
so yeah, you can click on participants down below, and then you can go over somewhere and...
Hi, Will. This is Andy.
Yes. Hi, Andy.
Hi. I just did the star 6 because I'm just doing the phone. I imagine you're in some kind of Zoom visual
thing. Sure. Mm-hmm.
But so the star 6 was very easy for me. I actually wasn't going to say anything, and then I thought, oh, what the heck. So first, thank you so much for doing this tonight and every night, and for doing this a little bit different and focusing on the, just sort of self-care, I guess. And because I really needed to hear that. I've just felt so rushed and racing, like we're running out of time and I can't do enough. And, on the one hand, every time I go into a grocery store or any other store, I'm usually probably the only one without a mask. And sometimes, sometimes I get verbally attacked But then sometimes I have some really positive experiences. And, you know, what the heck happened the other day? I think it was yesterday or the day before. And there is this adorable little business that's an eyeglass repair place. And I had just been so frantic about, you know, I just had a place to shower from these little gyms that had the courage to stay open. And then I showed up and the police were there and they just shut them down. And I was just so frantic and I got in my van and I wound up kneeling on my glasses and I totally crushed them. And I do know there's this incredible little place in San Diego called, I think it's Hot Shots. And the guy there, you know, generally if I break, you know, one part of my glasses, he fixes them. And he's amazing. He charges like $10-$15. And you just walk in and wait and, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it's just the most amazing service. And so I went over there and, you know, it didn't even occur to me to worry about the mask thing. It's just a little place. He did not have a sign on his door at all about masks required. And I was the only one there. Usually there's, you know, several people sitting. So I was the first one to walk in and I did not have a mask on. And he had a mask on, but he was very nice and welcomed me and treated me like I was a totally just normal customer. And then a few other people wound up walking in. They had masks, but everybody treated me kindly. And he was able to totally repair my glasses that were crushed in so many pieces. And after all of the insanity of every place I go into, every public place now, it's that tension of, is it going to be a battle and is it not? And so just to walk into this little place, there was no sign requiring a mask. He treated me with total respect. And I just wanted to cry. It just to be treated normally and kindly and with respect and not a mandatory mask. It was just such a wonderful experience.
So I am trying to look
at the, you know, good, positive things and appreciate them. So anyway, that's all. I just thought I would mention that. And there's, you know, there are a few good moments amongst a lot of the insanity, and I'm trying to pay attention to it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, thanks. It's. I think it's essential, of course, to do the best we can to always see the best in others and to focus on the positive when we see others, because part of the problem, I think, is we get into the sense of somehow we see that they're different from us in some way, and this sort of divisions that keep growing in our world. To actively bless others. One of the things that I find really is nice to do is the practice. We did it just a tiny bit at the end of the meditation at the beginning. I mentioned, if you noticed, I mentioned love, compassion, joy, and peace. And this is an ancient Buddhist practice called the Four Viharas. And this is something that I do quite a bit, just if I'm standing in line at the post office or driving the car or whatever it is, I just with every exhalation, send love to the people around, and then send compassion, and then send joy, and then send peace, and send it just to every human being, to the birds, you know, just send it out. And I think, you know, we can do that when we have an opportunity for a few minutes or even longer. Sometimes I'll just sit and do a meditation like that for 10 or 15 minutes. But what it does is it's kind of, I think it does, you know, I don't know if it helps other people, but I feel it if I just, maybe it does, if someone's walking by and I just send them a shot of love or compassion or joy or peace, then it maybe is helping them, because I think there is an awful lot more telepathic connection that we have with each other than we're aware of. I think we human beings are really far more telepathic, maybe on more unconscious or subconscious levels. So I think that's helpful just on that level, but on the other level, it tends, I think, to change my consciousness. So instead of finding people attacking or criticizing or so forth, it just doesn't happen that much. You know, it's more like just keep putting out love. Keep, no matter what, no matter what anyone does. And that's one of the things that I found in my own case. You know, I have this feeling. It sounds a little bit strange to say it, but it's kind of how I feel. It's like I feel like I didn't spend thousands and thousands of hours in meditation in order to be unhappy because of somebody else's trip, right? I mean, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to be made miserable or unhappy because someone else is angry with me or having a bad day or whatever it is. You know, I can stay. We can develop within ourselves, I think, more and more through practice, a foundation that is more and more stable and impermeable to these outside influences. In the in the Taoist tradition, which is very similar to Zen, they have this simile of the called being a person of smoke. A person of smoke. That what that means is, like the average person going down the street, if we haven't done much spiritual practice, then when things happen, it's like there's like little fish hooks that grab us, right? And someone says something that we don't like, and we get pulled down. It's kind of like the eight winds, you know. Someone else says something that we like, we get happy. Then they say something we don't like, we're not happy. You know, we're getting hooked all the time by all the things that are happening. We read this headline, we get all upset. We see that happen, we get, you know. And being a person of smoke, the idea is that there's no place for those hooks to land, right? They don't grab anywhere, you know. And I think when we look, again, beyond the level of the programmed personality, that's really helpful. I could say some more similes and metaphors, but I think, you know, that's the basic idea. And I think when we do that, we actually help raise the level of discussion and perhaps of quality of relationships in the world. Imperceptibly, but we can do it ourselves in our own way. Each one of us can be part of the solution or part of the problem. And I think the most important thing is to do the best we can, obviously, to be part of the solution, to be part of a positive, loving way of relating to other people. Whatever happens in the wherever they're at, you know, understand we've all been wounded, so we're going to respond according to our woundedness. And there's no point in judging someone about that. You know, that's how they are. They're wounded, and so we don't hit them or fight them. We do our best to be understanding, and then with that, our anger maybe turns to compassion, something like that. So we don't have to fight with our negative emotions so much and try to repress them or act them out or all that. They just don't come up as much. They just don't come up because we see that when someone's wounded, you don't want to hurt them again. They're already hurt, and so. If we have less to defend, I think we'll find ourselves fighting less also. And, of course, there's always, you know, in the nitty-gritty of daily life, there's always, finding the pathway. But I think it's not so much what we say to people. It's really how we say it. It's so much more as how I speak, how I am, who I am as I'm speaking. And that's something that we can practice before we go outside. We can get into a space of love, and that's what I think we're creating here with this satsang. It's a space of love, for all, not only for all of us, but expand that space of love to include everyone, because ultimately that's, I think, the way out of this whole thing, any kind of conflict. Ultimately is a cry for more intimacy and more love. And more awareness. I think we're seeing it more than ever now. And so, thanks, Andy, for that. So, we have time maybe for one more question or comment, and then maybe I'll play a little music. Again, I don't want to keep everybody too long here. I was thinking this would be maybe about an hour or so. So, let's see. I see Judy. I see Mark. I mean, Mark, you want to say something? Go ahead. If you and Judy, maybe after that.
Sure. So we're pretty much, you know, we have a yoga studio, World Peace Yoga, and so we're pretty much in the business of spirituality. And so just a few observations and maybe a little bit of what's going on with the studio. So we were considered non-essential initially with the lockdown, so we had to close the studio. And then we were able to reopen. Our guidelines in the state of Ohio are the same as gyms and fitness centers rather than hospitals. We like to be considered more frontline workers because so many people are having anxiety and tension, and they rely on their spiritual practice and their yoga practice as part of their spiritual practice. So we finally were able to open up, even though we did have classes online. We became a Zoom yoga studio, as so many other businesses have relied on these platforms. So we continue to serve the community. And yet it's interesting to me that once we were able to reopen, there were a lot of people that were still very fearful, and they decided to remain on Zoom for their spiritual practice and their relationship to the studio. And slowly and surely, people were coming back into the studio, and we're seeing new faces, and we're seeing old faces come back again. Because every single class is a satsang, and that's how we treat it, and that's how we look at it. So that's one of the reasons why, with very short notice, I came on tonight, because what we're realizing is that one of the most important practices is satsang right now. And for people that are like-minded to come together and collaborate on deeper, more intimate levels, and we're finding that that really is the health and freedom that people are looking for. So, for instance, we had a teacher training weekend, and it was out at our farm, and about half of the teacher trainers decided to come to the training in person over the weekend, and the other half were on Zoom. Well, one woman, Michelle, who is she's actually a nurse and has been involved with the hospital and COVID patients, quote unquote, and she was really concerned, and she wears a mask all the time when she's working, so for her, wearing a mask is kind of like sleeping at this point in time. It's just second nature. But she was on Zoom, and she saw all of us together in person, and she just hopped in her car. She knew she had a half-hour drive, and we were going to be there all day. She hopped in her car and drove out to the farm because she had just been feeling so much isolation and so much sadness as a result of it that it was just absolutely necessary for her to come and be with her people, and she did that. And I think more and more people are realizing the oneness that we talk about and the importance of experiencing that, and set aside some of these petty perspectives and views that are out here, especially the ones that are political, because all of us are together here because of empathy and compassion for fellow animals and for fellow beings on all life on this planet. And that's right. What unifies us. And that's right. What is important for us to keep together and stay together.
Thank you. Wow, that's a great story. That I know we are at a deep level social beings, and to be isolated from each other through social distancing or these other things can take an emotional toll that's greater than people realize, I think. So I really want to encourage everyone to find ways to bond with human beings in a way that you feel is nurturing. It can be a challenge, and this, you know, Zoom maybe can help a little bit, like we're doing now. But also maybe find other ways. It'd be great to see us being able to gather again. We're disappointed that the Unity spiritual conference that we're going to be having next month, we had to finally cancel it. It was the first time that we're going to have a vegan conference at Unity Village, and it was all set to go. But this is the situation. So to really tell, I just love it. You know, Madeline, I feel like Madeline and I have gotten even closer than ever through this whole thing, because we take time to, at least I really feel like I'm incredibly blessed every day to be with such a beautiful being, and to express that, you know, and to feel that, because you never know, this could be the last day, any day, we don't know. So to really appreciate each and every moment and day that we have, and the people around us, and let them know how much we appreciate them, I think is a big positive practice we can all engage in. So thanks, Mark, for and Anna, for your yoga ministry, the satsang you're doing there. And Judy, did you want to add something before we kind of close here?
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to say, Mark, you really, what you said was just so beautiful. And it underlines what Will has put together here as well, because we need this so much right now. I feel like this is really an opportunity for growth that maybe we've never had before, where we're even more motivated because we're even more aware than ever of how important each of us is to each other and our families and our friends. Real quick, I don't want to forget, Will, to thank you for mentioning my book, Homo Ahimsa, and Will wrote the foreword to it. So there's a lot in there about that's in line with what we're talking about tonight. The hope, the belief, the knowing even that we each have within us the ability to become Ahimsa people. And as that, we can solve some of these problems that look overwhelming right now. And but that's where we are. That's where all of us tonight are, is moving in that direction. And Will has given us so much beautiful guidance and thoughts for our journey as we transform and or awaken or open ourselves up to being who we really are, Homo Ahimsa. But I also wanted to say, I totally agree with what you're saying, Will, well, all of it, but one of the things that you said that struck home was what we're thinking when we're around people, to spread love and joy and compassion when we're among people, because so many people right now are afraid. We're in the post office, and everybody's wearing a mask. We don't really know what they're thinking, but at least one of those people is probably very afraid. And a lot of people in fear do say cruel things. And it's, I think we can demonstrate, because of all the work that we've been doing on nonviolence, I think we can demonstrate, even silently, how love is going to turn this all around. And but to watch our thoughts and not think violent thoughts, or if we do, let them go and understand that those are not our thoughts. And those are not Homo Ahimsa's thoughts. And we can do this. I have tremendous hope and really excitement about the time that we're in. But it is, we needed tonight, Will, and I really want to thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you so much, Judy, and everyone, really, for sharing your presence. Presence is an attention. There's nothing more precious than the attention of a divine being, and you know, you are a divine being, divine beings, and putting our attention on the truth that we are, and allowing that to be watered in the garden of our hearts, in the garden that we are creating together, to water and nurture the beautiful sprouts that want to emerge in our society. You know, what Judy said, and Mark also, but there's an old saying, the saying is this: man's extremity is God's opportunity. You know, that idea, you know, when it, very often when everything is going nice and everything, you know, no problem, then we kind of tend to just skate along and based on our conditioning. But when a real challenge comes, then suddenly there's an opportunity for something to crack open, for some new growth, new insights to begin to emerge, because we're compelled in many ways beyond the usual responses that we have to things. So I think that's maybe what we're seeing now too, is a positive thing, that as things get more, in a sense, extreme, then we have a greater opportunity to connect with the higher plan or the higher unfoldment that we can be part of. I just wrote an article, some of you may have seen, you can go to worldpeacediet.com, it's called The Art of Disobedience, how important it is for us to practice the art of disobeying the internalized, very often internalized narratives that are no longer serving us. And sometimes that means also disobeying the outer directives and guidelines from society as well, as Martin Luther King taught and many other people have taught. And really what veganism is practicing non-cooperation with the forces of violence and domination and exploitation. So living our lives in a consequent way and practicing non-cooperation with forces of violence and domination and exploitation, however we see that, is practicing the art, I think, of disobeying these laws or these taboos and so forth. And what I point out in the article, it came to me as I was writing it, is that disobeying is actually obeying. It's obeying a higher law. It's obeying a higher knowing. When we obey the higher knowing, it might look like we're disobeying the lower one, but we're not disobeying it. We're just like, I'm not eating meat, not because I want to, you know, harm the ranchers or anything. I'm obeying a higher law. So I think we can keep that in mind. So, all right, well, much love to all of you. Maybe we can close just with a short four viharas meditation. We have the opportunity, maybe, you know, as we go forth. I'm not sure if we'll repeat this again. Maybe this is something we can I can be in touch with. If, you know, let me know. I mean, you can always send me an email through worldpeacediet.com. I also want to just mention that tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. here in California, I'll be doing a Zoom call, kind of similar to this, to people in India. There's a big vegan compassion movement in India, and they're having this, should be a pretty big event of hundreds of people on Zoom, called Conversation with Dr. Will Tuttle on Compassion. And I'll have the link on there if you want to join that. It's limited, I think, to a few hundred people on Facebook. I mean, on Zoom, but it's open to thousands of people on Facebook. So if you want to be part of that, because I'll be in a dialogue with people from India who are vegan activists and also spiritual teachers in India. Because we made some good connections when we were there a couple of years ago. So that'll be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. our time, I guess noon Eastern time. So let's thank you again. Thank you all for joining us. We'll just maybe close with a short meditation. Abiding in our heart of love, abiding in the mind of loving kindness, with every inhalation, we engender in our heart this feeling of goodwill and loving kindness for others. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of love to radiate into our world, filling the whole world with the light of love and kindness, the yearning that others be happy and have all of the causes of happiness. And we send this feeling of love to everyone, even those who may be difficult for us. We exclude no one. All living beings. And we send this feeling of love now especially to ourselves. to the unique and beautiful being that we are in this lifetime. Holding ourselves in the heart of loving kindness, abiding in love, breathing and radiating love. With every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion. This is the yearning and wish that others be free from suffering and free from the causes of suffering. It is also the yearning to act, to help relieve the suffering of others. The great love is compassion. With every inhalation, we engender in our heart this feeling of compassion. And as we exhale, we radiate compassion to all living beings in all directions. Breathing and radiating compassion, abiding in our true home of compassion. With every inhalation now we engender in our heart the feeling of joy. This is the great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world. The joy of being, and the joy that we feel in the joy of others. So with every inhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to grow in our heart. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to overflow in ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole world with the truth of joy. Abiding in our true home, abiding in joy. And now with every inhalation we engender in our heart the feeling of peace. And with every exhalation we allow this feeling of peace and harmony to radiate from our heart. This is the great peace that comes naturally when our minds and hearts are filled with love, compassion, and joy. We are at peace. And we see the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace. Abiding in peace. So abiding in our true home. Abiding in love. In compassion. In joy. And in peace. May all beings be happy and at peace. right. So much love to you all. And again, thank you for your presence. We can close with our little, Judy and Aunt Madeline and I have a prayer we've created for the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, which goes, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We can all say that together silently. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And so it is. All right, well, much love to you all, and looking forward to our paths crossing again, and maybe we can do this on a, maybe I'll see how it goes, maybe every first Thursday or whatever of the month. Something to remind us. I'm open to suggestions, feel free to visit our website, worldpeacedite.com. You can see articles there in our schedule of most everything now. It's on Zoom pretty much. All right. So much love to you all, and love from Madeline, too. She's right here close by, and sending her love to everyone as well. All right. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Judy, so much. Yeah, goodbye. And
thank you.
All right. Love you all.
Thank
Thanks.
You
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Bye everybody.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Much love.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Deborah.
Thanks.